Hello, everyone. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to do a little table setting first. So, financial institutions have invested enormous amounts of money to develop a data lake or data warehouse. Aggregating and standardizing a bank's data into a data lake was really the first step to executing on a data strategy and becoming a data-driven bank. However, the millions invested in developing the storage center often generates a low return on investment. This is due to the difficulty of turning the data into actionable insights that can be utilized by more than just your IT or data department. Now, having a huge data lake is a lot like having the internet without a search engine. There's a lot of powerful information, but extracting insights is often manual, time-consuming, and available to people with specific skill sets. Ultimately, banks need to develop a strategy where they can utilize their data more like Google rather than AltVista or Yahoo Directory. To achieve this, banks need to categorize and contextualize the data for ease of use by all the business units in the bank. Now, what this really boils down to is that banks need to contextualize the data to get the most use out of it. Now, without any further delay, let's start the episode. Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about data. And to help me with that conversation, I have Rob Heiser, the CEO of Segment. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate you having me.
Now, to get things started, let's give our audience a little bit of an overview of, you know, what Segment does and who they are and the role that they play within the payments and banking industry.
Sure. Segment's a company that really leverages our technology. We have a technology called Key Lifestyle Indicators. And what we are the best and world leader at is really identifying that really messy, unstructured, you know, payment description data and categorizing that into kind of this meta taxonomy that's leveraged in all types of applications. Mostly, we're most known for marketing and marketing automation with our end-to-end Segment tool. But a lot of companies embed our technology. Anytime you see key lifestyle indicators or KLIs, that means they're embedding our technology within their platform. And that could be, like we said, marketing. It could be for cognitive or conversation. It could just be for, you know, insights around their data, understanding their data and their customers better.
Great. Thank you for that. So now, when we're taking a look at, you know, financial institutions here, it looks as though that they've created kind of these data lakes. And so really the kind of question is if they're creating these data lakes and are not able to easily able to leverage the data from there, why have them in the first place?
So it's an interesting phenomenon. I think, you know, the market and what's happened, I like to say, you know, don't let your data lake turn into the Dead Sea. And really what's happened, and either this is from market pressure, is that these institutions have created these large repositories of data, right? They have multiple kind of disparate systems, could be core, payments, mortgage, right? Could be fraud. What they want to do is they aggregate all this data into one location, which they call a data lake. And you know, that the inputs to that data lake could be transaction data from card swipes. It could be call center data, but they like to put all the data in one location, and that's typically done on the kind of Hadoop stack or, you know, kind of this large or big data, you know, infrastructures. And you know, they've invested millions of dollars to store all of this data, and it's really been driven by the IT department and not so much. You know, the business case is typically IT and they want to aggregate all the data together. It's really like that first stepping stone of them becoming kind of that data-driven bank. And so that's where it starts, is that they've invested a lot of money and now they want to go execute and do something with all this data. And where do they start?
Great. So kind of what I'm hearing there is that these data lake environments really was kind of a necessary step. So And there's a lot of richness in this data that they're being provided here that you pointed out. So why really are they struggling to be truly data-driven when they have some of the richest data available to them?
Well, let me make an analogy, you know, back to maybe when I was growing up in the internet, right? I think if you think about when the internet was kind of evolving, you know, where I went to figure out, you know, where information was, wasn't Google. Google wasn't there at the time, right? It was Yahoo, right? Yahoo Directory. And you spend enormous amounts of time trying to identify where to find information, right? And that is, you're drilling down through different categories to try to figure out what web pages might have the information that you have. And what really changed was is that I think that was great, and having an organized kind of like yellow pages for websites was great at the time, but it wasn't very efficient, right? It was challenging. There was not a whole lot of context and the content wasn't really well organized other than in a directory structure. And if you're trying to find something specific, you'd end up getting to the website you wanted, but spending a lot of time to just determine if that site had the information you needed. And that's really what happened. Like, Google kind of came in and created search around, keyword search and that kind of search engine, indexing that allowed us to like basically put a term in, I'm looking for this specific thing, and get a result back in milliseconds. And that was that big change of giving like context and efficiency to this massive amount of data from the internet. And I think that's kind of the bridging of the gap that's happening today. I think the banks are putting all of this data in these large kind of repositories, right? But not having the tools necessary to kind of efficiently put the data to work in business. And I think that's the important aspect of this. I mean, if you think about even the bridge between what Yahoo and Google, there was the search engine, if everybody remembers, called AltaVista, which was that show the power of the DEC Alpha chip, right? It was a project to show how powerful computers can be. And they didn't have the business aspect that Google brought to it, right? And that's why Google business model works so well. And I think that's the thing what's struggling with the banks is that they've created these kind of enormous amount of data repositories, data lakes, but they're struggling to like pull out the value and put that in the business process, in the business strategy.
Great. Now, let's say, for instance, that I'm a financial institution now, and I've invested all this money in collecting all of this data here. Now, what is it that I would need to do to get the most out of this investment?
Well, I think you've aggregating and standardizing all this data is kind of that next step, right? I think they've put it all in one place. But now, how do you like aggregate it? How do you index it? How do you give it context? You know, how do you basically give it the ability to let the front house of the bank, the business side of the bank, leverage the data in a way that they can execute from a strategy perspective? I think that's the important aspect of it. It's not so much, if you're on Wall Street and, the CEO's asked at their earnings report, do you have a strategy around a data-driven bank? Yes, but is that just technology infrastructure, or is that actually what are you doing with it? What's the business cases? What's the use cases? How are you applying that to solve your business problems? Right, that's the thing that we're seeing that's not happening today. We're seeing the enormous amounts of investment, but not so much executing. And that next step is really standardizing and tagging that data in a way that you can go execute on that in a timely fashion, right? The speed of leveraging this data is as important as having the data itself. Because I'll use a great example of this. If I made a very abnormally large deposit, let's say I got a big bonus at the end of the year, and I'm going to do something with that money, right? That money typically doesn't stay in the bank more than 72 hours, right? They're going to move that money to something that makes sense for them, right? They might move it to an investment account at TD. Well, that's an opportunity that banks missing if they can't leverage the data very quickly from all these transactions that are flowing. Another great example of that is if you've ever heard of a tool called Robinhood. Robinhood does a small ACH deposit and withdrawal, which means you're going to start investing in another vehicle outside of the bank, and money's going to move. Assets are going to move from the bank to Robinhood. Well, if you don't identify that transaction's happened, there's going to be probably some kind of withdrawal from your 20 to 30 year old investors that are looking to start investing in the market without an advisor. So there's lots of opportunity for a bank to execute on this data, but having it standardized, categorized, and tagged appropriately is that next first step.
All right, so within a bank, we see a lot of innovation happening, but what is holding that back from a data perspective?
Well, I think if you think about what a bank does today, right? If you think about their process, you know, there's several things that are created in a process from a bank perspective, right? And what we've identified is, one, they first need to internally identify what the business case is, right? What are they going to do? How are they going to execute on what the challenge, right? If it's sales or marketing or fraud, whatever, they need to identify what that business case is, right? Then they're going to go validate the case, right? So using the sales and marketing aspect, they want to validate that, you know, this is what we want to go execute, and this is kind of the plan, and this is what we're going to do. And then they have to go get acceptance from IT, right? Because this is not something they can just go execute on their own. So typically that takes some time, right? They talk with IT what the business case is. Is it possible? Is the data available? How are they going to go execute that in terms of the business case, right? And then the next step is really having IT run the data, you know, run the business case, because they have to go execute on that. And then they need to validate the results of that business case. So they have to understand, like, what was created, what was the model, what's the outcome of the model that we ran, right, from all this massive amount of data that we have. And then they need to validate it. And if the results don't justify the business case, then you have to go back to step one and do it all over again, right? If it does validate it, right, then they can apply the insights, they can go develop and design and employ the strategy for the marketing campaign or the sales execution, right? And then they can go track the results back with IT. Well, that process alone isn't a day or week. You're talking several months to go execute on that today. And the challenge with doing with it that way, that 3 to 4 to 5 months to go execute on something that's going to take this amount of data, this much time, these models, these resources, the challenge that you have is you miss the market opportunity, right? Typically, these market opportunities aren't six-month market opportunities. You know, they're 30, 60, 90-day opportunities, right? And that's how we react as a society, is we read news and make decisions, right? And I think that's the important aspect of really having a really, you know, efficient data strategy, is to remove that very daunting and time consuming process and change the way the business looks at data from the tools that are available for them.
Great. Now, taking what you said, can you give us a real world example of how this is implemented?
Yeah. So I think if you take a step back and you look at, you know, if you start with all the data are categorized and everything's already indexed, right? And the tools are available for the sales, marketing, and business side of the house to go in and understand and look at maybe audience sizes. They can look at, you know, what the audience is doing, where they're spending money, how are they executing. Maybe they might look at past performance, if they maybe ran a campaign in market that was, you know, email, digital, even billboard. You know, what was the effect of the conversion for that? If they have the tools to do that on their own, then when they need IT was already involved in beginning setting up the tools for them. And then when they need to go a step further, they can execute on IT to help execute on the plan, but not so much be involved throughout the whole process. So they can do self-validation, which will significantly speed up the process, not by weeks, but months. And I think that's the important thing is, you know, all these IT, you know, groups within institutions are so heavily under-resourced, right? And, you know, they have so many projects that they're working on and so many different competing priorities that, you know, the things that are kind of really ideal market opportunities for sales and marketing, they're missing because it's stacked behind the three, you know, maybe the two integrations they've done, or the new core system they're putting in, or the new online banking system they're putting in. And providing the tools directly to the front of the house, the business side of the bank, for them to understand and execute will help them drive immediate results to the institution in quarter, which is important.
Great. Now, so as we're looking at 2018 and beyond here, what are some of the things that are really kind of getting you excited about seeing within the banking and payments industry?
You know, I think there's a lot of changes. I think that one of the things that's interesting, which I think is a big innovation that's coming, but also can be an incredible disruptor, is blockchain, right? I think as the banks kind of put their arms around it and identify what they're going to do, how they're going to leverage it, what's the aspect of that. It can also be a massive disruptor, right, from a bank perspective, because it kind of decentralizes, that need of that one-to-one relationship. And I think that's an important aspect from an institution, to try to figure out what to do, or how are they going to leverage blockchain? What's the power of that? Do they apply transactions and business cases against that? How they're going to apply that technology within the bank? And then how does that look from an external perspective, from a customer? You don't want the bank just to become a commodity, because I think even today they're a very trusted source, right? Even with all kind of the recent bad press and the different crises within the industry, I think we still trust all our money, right, and our financial livelihoods to these institutions. Now it's the point that they need to start, giving back in terms of, really working with the clients and personalization and service, and really grow that relationship beyond what they're even seeing in the beginning of 2018.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Rob, for taking the time today for speaking to us about data, and we hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.